from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning, in his first visit to South America since becoming pontiff, Pope Francis faces high expectations and civil unrest in Brazil, a country that has seen a marked decline in its numbers of Catholics. In light of the Pope's visit, we'll discuss the current economic, political, and social landscape of Brazil. Our guests include Paulo Sotero, director of the Brazil Institute at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and Juanita Darling, Associate Professor of International Relations at San Francisco State University. Join us for Forum next after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Thousands have turned out in Brazil to see Pope Francis, an Argentine-born pope, in his first official trip and foreign tour as pontiff. The largest Latin American economy and the seventh largest economy in the world, Brazil has more Catholics than any other nation, an estimated 123 million, with a marked rise in recent years in both secularism and evangelical Protestantism, which reveals presently only about 65% of the country's Catholic population actually identify as Catholic. In what began as street protests growing out of a campaign against bus fare increases, a million Brazilians last month took to the streets to protest the poor quality of public services, the high cost of living, and the misuse of public money. And this morning's opening forum hour, we want to discuss the Pope's visit to Brazil and what lies ahead for the nation and its present government, a 17-party coalition under the leadership of Dilma Vanna Rousseff, Brazil's first woman president. First, we want to go to Brazil, actually to Rio, and welcome Juliana Barbosa, who is a former AP reporter based in Brazil and is writing a book on Rio. Welcome, Juliana Barbosa. Good to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, let's begin with the Pope's reception. It's pretty grand and a lot of excitement and electricity charging the air, huh?
Yes, he got a very Brazilian welcome, the good and the bad side of a great Brazilian welcome. People thronged the streets, ecstatic. There's crying. There's, you know, more cameras held up than I've ever seen in a crowd. Entering into the city actually came with a wrong turn, and he ended up stuck behind buses and basically a very typically Rio traffic jam. But the people were very warm. They surrounded the car. There was some concern about security, but the Pope himself didn't seem concerned. He rolled down the windows. People reached in to touch him. He greeted them, kissed babies. That whole thing.
Now, there was a shrine that he was supposed to visit that allegedly had a bomb, not allegedly, it did have a bomb planted there, though it turned out not to be all of that serious. What is going on with respect to the protests? Can you fill us in on what the character of that is now?
Yes, he comes to Brazil at a very complex moment. The protests are not directed at the Pope himself, but when he first arrived, he did meet with local authorities, including some of the people who have been very much targeted by these protests, the governor and the mayor of Rio. This meant that after this warm welcome that I just described downtown, as he made his way to the government palace, there were lots of riot police out with their shields up. The protesters who had been expecting the local authorities were chased away with tear gas and water cannons, and there were several injured. Four people, I believe, were injured in the process.
And the protests, generally, if you could characterize them, have a good deal to do with, concern about public services, but also health care and poor education. I mean, there's been a lot of, and corruption, faulty justices, a lot of issues raised.
Yes, I think the general sense is that materially things have improved a lot in Brazil in the past decade. There's more money going around. Employment has been very high. The usual measures seem to show that things are going well, but the quality of life, the structure of the country hasn't changed. Infrastructure is still very poor. Access to health is still very poor. Education, the roads, the cost of living is very high because taxes are very high. And so the sense is, you know, once the basic needs are met, people are starting to ask for more. There's this new middle class that's making these sort of second wave demands. You know, we're paying a lot of taxes. It's the cry that's heard everywhere. You know, we're paying a lot of taxes. We want services to match. We want a government that's responsive and will listen to our needs. You know, this at a time when so much money is being spent bringing these mega events, the Olympics, the World Cup, to town, people are starting to question the goals of this government.
Now, we should also mention the World Catholic Youth are there as well, the annual international gathering of a group of young Catholics for World Youth Day. And as far as the tax system, it's a dysfunctional tax system. I mean, it gives priority to consumption tax over income taxes, and largely because they're easier to collect, but there's a lot of tax loopholes. So we're seeing some real strains and real tensions, obviously, internally in Brazil.
Exactly. People are, like I said, there's a sense that we've come out of this history of the 80s and 90s of going from one crisis to the next and dealing with the effects of hyperinflation, basically consuming salaries before the month was over. Now we're living this period of stability, even though growth has slowed down. This is the longest stretch of political and economic stability in my lifetime. And so people are starting to ask some harder questions of their government.
Juliana Barbosa, again, former Associated Press reporter. She's based in Brazil, joined us from Rio and is writing a book on Rio. And glad to have had you with us. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Let me tell you who else is joining us actually for the hour. Juanita Darling is here in studio with us. She's Associate Professor of International Relations at San Francisco State University. We welcome you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I also want to welcome Paulo Sotero, who is with us from the nation's capital. He's the director of the Brazil Institute with the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. And Paulo Sotero, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning
to
you.
Happy to be here.
Glad to have you. Let me actually begin by asking you some questions about the Pope's visit, if we could deconstruct it. We have, as I said in my introduction, many Catholics in Brazil, but not necessarily the numbers, let's say, identifying as strongly with the Church as just a decade ago, or let alone even 5 years ago. The real purpose behind the Pope's visit is to make that greater connection with not only Brazil, but Latin America, maybe make the Vatican not so Eurocentric?
Yeah, well, he is the first Latin American pope. This visit was scheduled actually by his predecessor, and he confirmed it. Latin America has some 40% to 50% of the world's Catholic. Brazil is the largest Catholic nation on earth and also home to the largest evangelical community on earth these days. So it is sort of, if you want to put this in terms of a competition, is the battleground, you know, where those two versions of Christianity meet, etc., offering different solutions. The Catholic Church, sometimes those numbers about the advancement of evangelicals in Brazil are overstated. There have been some studies analyzing that. Brazil is a deeply culturally Catholic country, but it is true that attendance to church and the number of people who identify themselves as Catholic has come down from 80-85% 20 years ago to around 60%. So for the Pope, it is obviously a very important mission in the region he comes from, where he is really very much liked by his simplicity, by his style. This is not a man, a doctrinaire like his predecessor Benedict. He is no theologian. This is a pastor, a bishop, and he comes to I believe propose a new sort of engagement and try to attract, preach the gospel and revitalize a church that has been obviously losing ground.
Yes, I noticed even that he was welcomed by former priest Leonardo Boff, who had been fired by Pope Benedict. Juanita Darling, it's not only the division, I suppose, between the evangelicals and the Catholics that comes into focus here. It's also, if I may, the church in Brazil has been looked down upon for liberation theology, hasn't it?
That's a really important point. I mean, Paulo Freire, Câmara, were important leaders in the liberation theology movement, which has not had a lot of favor in the Vatican. And one of the points the visit that the Pope was supposed to have made today was not only to a place that was of religious importance for Brazil, but it was also a place where he and other religious leaders in Latin America had met to try to find a doctrine that was some that would bring the reforms of Vatican II without some of the parts of liberation theology that were objectionable to the Vatican, and trying to attract the poor back to the church or retain them in the church with a doctrine that is. I mean, liberation theology was very attractive in that regard of talking about the kinds of changes that people in Brazil throughout Latin America wanted. And if the church is not to support that doctrine, then it needs some alternative that will be equally attractive.
Let's talk, if I can talk, about what's happening on the economic side, because Brazil has been seen traditionally with China and India as a growing economy, and yet there's been a slowdown, a specter of stagflation and possibly even recession. Yet Brazilians remain, I was reading in The Economist, pretty optimistic. I mean, family incomes are still rising, unemployment is low, a growing middle class.
But with that optimism comes expectations. And so the protests that we're seeing are a reflection of perhaps an insistence that as the economy slows down, that different priorities take place. That the Brazilians are not willing to continue to build to spend money on overruns on. Mega construction projects at the expense of social services. And they're not willing to pay higher public transportation fares. They're not willing to accept lower quality in public schools so that these other projects can go forward. Always when the pie is growing, it's a lot easier to divide it. And it's very heartening to see Brazilians saying, we want to express an opinion about how the government should deal with this situation.
Well, Paulo Sotero, a lot of this is also a response to corruption, isn't it? And the construction of the World Cup and the Olympics and the corruption and the costs of those structures?
Well, there is that theme, you know. There is a great frustration in Brazil with the fact that there seems to be a greater growing disconnect between those elected to government in the Congress, etc., especially, and the population. I think that the protests were an expression of that frustration, that there is a self-serving political class that came out of a exemplary movement for democratization in the last 30 years, a country that has stabilized an economy that lived with hyperinflation, did this in democracy, that elected the first man of the people in a very unequal society through elections, President Lula in his fourth attempt to be president. So in many ways, this was very positive. There were significant, as Juliana mentioned, as Juanita mentioned, there were significant progress. But, you know, this model based on growth based on consumption is basically exhausted right now, and people have seen the promised land of a more equitably shared prosperity, and they want to get there, and that's I think part of the reason they were in the streets in June was that, you know, that we are going to get to that land, and you better do what needs to be done, including better priorities in public space. Spending. We can host the World Cup, but we don't need to spend those amounts of money to do that. There are better ways. So I find this in a very positive light. I think it's a moment of renewal, of the democratic renewal for Brazil. Whether the leadership will be capable of responding is another question. And I think the Pope's visit is really very welcome, even in that sense, because the Pope brings to the conversation in Brazil, the question of values, of meaning, you know, why we are doing all that. Pay attention to the poor, pay attention to what really matters in life. And I think that enriches the whole atmosphere in Brazil.
And Juanita, darling, Paulo Sotero mentioned President Lula. He still has top aides who were convicted who are not serving time. and the fact is that under the present government, under Dilma Vana Rousseff's government, you've got 17-party coalition, and there's a lot of infighting. There's a lot of rifts going on. I mean, this is a government. How stable is this government?
This is always a difficulty with coalition governments, because the coalition has been it's a form that has been adopted throughout much of Latin America as a way to get around the problem of the three-thirds, of the fact that a country like Brazil is often divided into three very firm segments, and none of them has enough clout to actually be able to govern the country. And so there are much smaller parties that are developed that are more ideological, and then they create coalitions among them, but those coalitions shift. And there are also varying degrees of loyalty. I mean, the corruption was a problem throughout Lula. I mean, that's why Rousseff became his chief of staff, is because his previous chief of staff had to resign over corruption charges. And Lula has been very Teflon. I'm not sure and able to use social programs to refocus attention on issues other than corruption. I'm not sure to what extent Rousseff is going to be as successful as he was in doing that, because he was remarkably successful at maintaining his own prestige at the same time he was leading a coalition of extremely corrupt people.
And if you just joined us, we're talking about Brazil, not only the Pope's visit to Brazil, but also really laying out the present situation in Brazil as best we can with the protests that are going on and with economic changes very much in the air there. I want to, in fact, open our phone lines and invite those of you who are listening, if you have some questions about Brazil and about the Pope's visit or some thoughts you want to add to this conversation, feel free to join us. We do welcome your participation. Our toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786, and you can indeed feel free to join us with your thoughts, and we welcome them. 866-733-6786 is the phone number to call. You can also, of course, email us, forum@kqed.org, or join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and clicking on this segment, or going to our Facebook page. We do welcome your involvement in the program. We're talking with Paulo Sotero, who is director of the Brazil Institute with the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and Juanita Darling here in studio with us, associate professor of international relations at San Francisco State University. I'd like to hear some responses from listeners just in terms of, and particularly perhaps some of you who are Catholic, to the Pope's visit to Brazil and what it instilled in you, and especially for those of you who are Catholic who come from Latin America or Latin American lineage or background. There is a definite attempt, I think, to shift the perspective somewhat from being Eurocentric and being pretty much centered on the Vatican, but also there's a good deal of concern with just the progress of Brazil. Once a leading economic, I said along with India and China, seen as one of those countries that was an economic success story, and now having slowed down somewhat. So we're trying to take all this into account, and we do welcome your involvement in the program. Paulo Sotero, also interested in perhaps getting your response to Just talking about the present government as opposed to the Lula government, there was initially a good deal of attempt at reform. And some of those reforms that were brought forth from many people's lights were fairly significant. I'm talking, of course, about following the protests. There was talk about all that corruption and so forth, and then reforms were moving forward, but now they seem to be stalled. And anti-bribery bill and politicians for a while actually paying for personal expenses that they had availed themselves of. So there seems to be a kind of slowdown or maybe even grinding to a halt there now.
Well, the reforms that are needed are, you know, structural reforms, infrastructure, education, etc. The government is aware of that, has not been very able to move those forward. In terms of what happened since the protest, the politicians woke up. They were completely perplexed, surprised by what happened. Actually, journalists were completely surprised and perplexed by that, by the movement. And they started to respond with some reforms here and there, very specific things. I think the big moment, one big moment will happen in August when the Supreme Court in Brazil has to decide about the 12 people that have been convicted and sentenced to jail terms in the scandal that Juanita mentions called the Mensalão, which is one of the largest corruption scandals in Brazil, in recent Brazilian history, and that involved directly the government of President Lula. That could insensitive decisions by the Supreme Court regarding the activation of those sentences could regenerate, re-energize protests in Brazil. And there are other things. People are very mobilized requiring and putting pressure that for a system to move in a more productive way, in a consequential way, to respond to the matters of that affects people's quality of life, especially in cities that Juliana mentioned in the beginning of the program.
Juliana, if I go back to you, these protests seem to be related to a wider international economic context, aren't they?
Oh, very much so, and also to a regional context. Many of the overriding issues are the same kinds of issues that we saw in the student protests in Chile, the student-led protests in Chile, which have come to encompass a much wider part of the population in many ways in the 132 movement last year in Mexico. And it's also
almost like the Occupy movement in some ways, too.
Yeah, exactly. I think what's really interesting is the response of governments, even though the government of Brazil has not moved as quickly as the protesters would have liked to address their concerns, the president has said that people have a right to protest, which seems perhaps very self-evident to us in San Francisco, but has not always been very evident in Brazil. It's a very different response, for example, to what the protesters received in 1968 in Mexico City under similar protests, under similar circumstances.
Well, coming up on a break, but let's talk about the president for a moment. This is a woman president, the first, and also a former socialist guerrilla.
Yeah, she was
an activist in her youth, very popular until the protests, now facing probably a very tough re-election challenge next year.
Well, also, again, I want to invite those of you listening to join us in his first visit to South America since becoming Pope Francis, facing high expectations and civil unrest in Brazil, a country that has seen a marked decline in its number of Catholics. We can talk about that. We can also talk about Brazil, its current economic, political, and social landscape, because we're taking that into account here. And you can join us toll-free at 866-733-6786 or email us forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, your host, hoping my voice will hold out here. This is sometimes a challenge, but like I told Judy Campbell, I like to keep my reputation intact as being a trooper. We're talking about Brazil this hour. We're talking about changing political, social, and economic landscape in Brazil, and also talking about the fact that Pope Francis is there and seeing a shift, perhaps, in the Catholic world, more concentration on Latin America. Pope Francis, of course, is Argentine-born, and you may want to weigh in here on what sort of impact you think this is going to have. The Pope's visiting Brazil. This is unprecedented, of course, and a lot of not only concentration on South America for reasons of the great population, the numbers population of Catholics there, but also the fact that, as has been noted by our guests, a growing evangelical movement, and for that matter, growing secularism, which has been certainly a counter to Catholics. We heard the figures from Paulo Sotero of the Brazil Institute that it was 80% decades ago of those Catholics who identified as being Catholic, and it's a tough mission to regain ground because it's gone down to between 60 and 65%. And we're talking generally, of course, about Brazil, one of the would-be economic powerhouses, and yet a country that is terribly rife with class divisions and poverty, as well as great wealth. Paulo Sotero, again, is director of the Brazil Institute with the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and Juanita Darling is associate professor of international relations at San Francisco State. They are both with us for the hour. We spoke earlier with Juliana Barbosa, who joined us from Rio, a former Associated Press reporter based in Brazil. And let's go to your phone calls. And we begin with Paulo from Palo Alto. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. First of all, I want to congratulate your panel for what I think it's a very accurate account of what's happening in Brazil right now. I am a dual Brazilian U.S. citizen. I live here in Palo Alto, as you said. And my concern is I perceive what I can only describe as contempt by the politicians and the government, other than cosmetic gestures. To the protests in the streets, it would be naive to assume that the government or this current Congress is going to really change their self-serving, as Paulo Sotero mentioned, ways. And just the very fact that many convicted individuals, by the endless, countless scandals that have, these individuals are heading, you know, the ethics committees or the Committee for Political Reform. I mean, that's pathetic. That's a disgrace. And I'm afraid that what started as a peaceful protest, which is the nature of the Brazilian society, can escalate rapidly into violence if the government doesn't really take, you know, serious measures other than welcoming the Pope, who, again, is, you know, the Catholic Church, as Paulo so correctly described, is losing ground very rapidly. And then one of the reasons the Catholic Church is losing ground is this total disconnect between the reality in the streets. And this is historical. This is not new. The new fact is that the new middle class has not only, you know, expectations, as I think Juliana described, but has finally, you know, awakened, and it's aware of this total disconnect between the government and the reality. So that's what I wanted to express.
Actually, I'm glad you expressed it, Paulo. In fact, let me go to Paulo Sotero on this, because I think the specter of violence, how serious is it in Brazil, as you see it, Paulo Sotero?
Well, urban violence is a problem. Major cities, although there have been more successful policies addressing that, as, you know, incomes have risen and you have better economic and social responses. But in terms of the protests itself turning violent, I believe that, you know, most of the protests were peaceful. There were scenes of violence. There were acts of vandalism and looting here and there. But the organizers, those are protests, by the way, organized the social media, and they were very interestingly, they were very good in pulling back when they saw that the protest could lose credibility because of violence. So in response to Paulo, I remember when it was impossible to think, to consider that Brazil would ever become a democracy or have a stable economy. What we face now is the consequence of what Juanita mentioned in terms of the presidentialism by coalition, which is very corrupting. The government has to buy allegiance in the morning and buy it for a higher price again in the afternoon. And what is at stake now is a reform of a political system. It's being considered. The pressure is on. And I believe that if society keeps the pressure on, we are going to be at a better place in a few months, in a couple of years.
Again, Paulo Sotero is director of the Brazil Institute with the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and Juanita Darling is associate professor of international relations at San Francisco State University. Let me bring on another caller, and that's Jack. Jack, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'm calling from San Francisco. I just returned to the States. I lived in Brazil for 20 years. I taught at the University of Brasilia, federal university in the capital. So I got some upfront and personal observations of what was going on. And one thing that isn't talked about much, rarely, is the core reason for the extremes in society, and that's distribution of wealth. I'm not sure of the current statistics, but in the past, had the third worst distribution of wealth in the world. After Swaziland and Niger,
excuse me, Jack, but the Brazilian slums are almost legendary in terms of their impoverishness.
Yeah, and that's because of distribution of wealth. The fact is that Congress is still run by the old boys, the elite. Dilma and Lula have tried to change that to some extent with distribution of wealth, but they can't get anything through the Congress. So until there's a whole new political class that enters politics, you're not going to see any meaningful long-term changes. So this movement, started by middle-class youth mostly, needs to include everyone because, you know, Brazil's about 50% Afro-American or Afro-Brazilian, and they're excluded from society more or less. So that, there needs to be a civil rights movement, and I think then, in getting people elected to office, going through a democratic evolution, you'll see some profound changes, but it's distribution of wealth. The elite that run the government aren't about to spread that about, spread it around. That's why they haven't spent money on health, haven't spent money in education. So that's the fundamental thing. Lula did very little about that. And until that's addressed, I don't think you'll see some cosmetic changes, but you won't see profound changes, change the core of the society by getting people into government. Like, for example, my colleagues at the University of Brasilia, all well-qualified, so why don't you enter politics? They'd sit around and complain about it. And it's just too dirty. I'll get isolated. I knew one senator named João Calmon, who was uncorruptible. He did more for education than anyone in Brazil. And I talked to him about that when he was retired, and I said, well, when you fought corruption, what happened? He said, I got isolated. So that's the problem, distribution of wealth. And maybe your panel there can discuss that and see what they think the significance of that in terms of making some profound social change.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up. And Professor Darling, let me go to you on this. I mean, the chasm between the wealthy and the poor in Brazil is almost, on the face of it, irreconcilable and vast.
It is vast, but it needs to be addressed, because if Brazil actually wants to move ahead and be an economic powerhouse, it needs to have a labor force. And by marginalizing people, by not providing good health care, by not providing good education, they're shutting down their possibilities for economic growth. But of course, as you educate people, they are going to demand more of a say in their economy and in their country. They are going to create more pressures to end corruption, and the people who are in power now are aware of that, and so it becomes a struggle between all of these different factors. And what happens when you educate people and empower them, but also what happens if you don't? Because Brazil has now trying to position itself not only as an economic leader but as a political leader. Brazil has made some gestures toward receiving a permanent seat on the UN Security Council, they need to have a strong economy, and they need to be perceived in a positive way in terms of their treatment of their own population in order to make receive that kind of international recognition.
Well, let me thank Jack. And Jack also raised an important issue about those in perhaps academic life or in prominent positions not wanting to go into politics in Brazil and not wanting to that could be said about many Americans as well, but Manuel, one of our listeners, wants to know, how are campaigns financed in Brazil? Can you shed some light on that for us, Juanita, darling?
Well, because of the huge disparities in the distribution of wealth, you're not going to get the kind of everybody contribute $1 campaigns that tend to elect people who are less than corrupt. There's some financing that comes from the state, but a lot of the financing depends on private donors, and so people, as they do in the U.S., they end up becoming beholden to the people who have contributed to their campaigns.
You want to add anything to that, Paulo Sotero?
No, that is precisely right. And one of the demands right now is the campaigns become publicly financed. I don't know if that is a good solution either, but that is a huge, huge problem. And Jack was absolutely right in terms of the inequality issue. Now, I think that Brazil is going in the right direction. Brazil was the third most unequal country in the world about 15 years ago. Today is the 10th most unequal country. Enormous progress needs to be made. I think Juanita is absolutely right in terms of, if you want to be a player in the world, you have to treat your people in a way that you have to be presentable. I think Brazil is struggling to go in that direction. That's why you can demonstrate by the fact that 40 million Brazilians that were previously classified as poor today are part of a middle class. It's a lower middle class, but it's a consuming class, and that means progress. What you need to have now, and what people are desperately demanding in the streets, to have really a more consequential political class. That is the struggle. I think will continue to be the struggle for the next few years. What you have to do basically is to convince part of the political class, the Brazilian political class, to commit suicide. And there are ways, I think, creative ways in which you can do that. And there are some proposals being considered by Popular Action, Popular Initiative, as we speak.
This sounds like a paper you should write, Paulo Sotero, creative ways to commit suicide politically. I would be very interested in reading that. Let me go to another caller who joins us from Springfield, Missouri, and that's Kent. Kent, you're on with us. Hi.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm very interested in the Pope's visit because I'm Catholic, and I had worked in Brazil in the late 60s and 70s as a Peace Corps volunteer, and later was employed in business down in Brazil. But I had the good fortune of working with a director of a seminary in Brazil, and he was also the director of the co-op where I worked, and he was a liberation theologist. And my background there tells me that the work of the church can be, in fact, very significant, because we made every effort to help the poor people in the rural settings to try to overcome the tremendous difficulties with lack of education and health care and infrastructure for themselves. And so the Pope's visit today and through the next few days, I think, is significant in that the church can recognize that the poor have rights and they should be supported through their union activities, through land reform, and to try to discourage the overwhelming urbanization of society.
Kent, I think you make an important point. There's certainly a desire to do something to ameliorate the poverty in Brazil, and this Pope has become identified with being passionate about reducing, if not in some ways vanquishing, poverty. But I suppose, Paulo Sotero, it bears importance here to note the fact that the present Pope, Francis, certainly in terms of his own background, was no lover of liberation theology. I mean, in fact, he had problems when he was in Argentina with those who took up that credo. And, he follows the party line, I suppose you could say, as far as the Vatican and Ratzinger's party line before he became Pope Benedict.
Well, he is, I believe, he agrees with the motivation of liberation theology, not with the methodology, and he wrote about this. Obviously, he comes from a very conservative church, or the Argentine church was famously conservative, as the Brazilian church, Catholic church, is famously more progressive because of Elder Câmara and Leonardo Boff and many other priests and people that really remained with the poor in Brazil.
Yeah, now, excuse me, can I just interrupt you for a minute? Because I was very struck by the fact that Leonardo Boff welcomed the Pope and was very glad that the Pope came. That's quite significant, isn't it?
Yes, first, remember, Leonardo Boff is a Franciscan, and his first reaction when Bergoglio chose this name, Francis, was to say, this is not a name, this is a plan of action. So it comes from there. Actually, it was Leonardo Boff's reaction that made me pay attention and to this Pope. And I think now it is, I think this option for the poor is back. I think he will try to bridge back to Vatican II, to the Latin American Conference of Bishops that is meeting today. Actually, there is a meeting, many of them today in Aparecida, not a formal meeting, but a reunion, and that he will try to get this, you know, gospel of the poor, but in a way that he makes clear. He is about spirituality, religion, engagement, but not ideology in the political sense. He is a pastor, and that's a fine line, because he is facing, on the other side, the gospel of prosperity of the evangelicals that come from the United States has been pretty successful, especially among parts of this rising middle class in Brazil.
And I want to thank the caller, Kent. And did you want to add anything here, Juanita, darling?
Well, I keep thinking of, Elder Camara was famous for saying that when I give food to the poor, I'm considered a saint. And when I question why they are poor, then I'm considered a communist. And I think that this is part of the issue that the church is facing, that it's concerned about the poverty, but to be able to actually talk about, to work within it, to change those structures, then, as we were talking about before, they come up against this elite and this leadership class that is very opposed to that. And part of the problem that you get if you're very insistent is that you get a situation like in Guatemala where the elites are leaving the Catholic Church because they find it too radical.
And we'll bring another caller on here, and that's Max. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for a good program and for taking my call. I have a question regarding corruption in Brazil. I gather that 25 people highly placed in the Labor Party and the government of Lula, former government of Lula, have been indicted, tried, found guilty, and nobody has served one day in jail. Can you discuss that? That seems to be a very serious problem. And there is a serious question about the integrity of Lula himself and his son. I'd like to have you respond. Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you, Max. I alluded to this before, Juanita, darling. I mean, there have been convictions, but nobody served any time.
Yeah, well, it's partly because they're still going through an appeals process, and so that's part of what Paulo mentioned about the trials that are going to the Supreme Court next month, and if nothing happens in the meantime, it depends a lot on what the decisions that the Supreme Court makes as to how this is going to be viewed.
Question, Paulo Sotero, from a listener named Fabian, who writes, could you please ask about the lack of Brazilian leadership in the region, for example, the issue with Evo Morales in Europe? I'm not sure what issue he's alluding to here, but perhaps you can respond.
Well, there is Brazil has had a tremendous difficulty with that, because Brazil is sort of the hegemon in South America, and Brazil has had some difficult asserting leadership or actually leading the region or framing a set of policies in which it could lead. Brazil has appeared in the world because of its internal success, the things that I mentioned before, a stable economy, a democracy, a rising middle class, but has had difficulty formulating, actually, in the Brazilian tradition, the very statement development of Brazilian leadership in the region is something that diplomats in Brazil have been trained historically to not do, because precisely the country is so big, so much bigger than the neighbors, that it could cause negative reactions. The problem is that, you know, there are a growing number of Brazilian global companies that are important in the region, and Brazil has to sort of develop a strategy for leadership that has to be, doesn't necessarily need to repeat any model, but has to be an inclusive leadership, and a leadership that where people, you know, that may follow Brazil leadership here or there, will do this very voluntarily. In terms of Evo Morales, the issue, I believe, was the fact that his airplane was retained somewhere in Europe, because there was a suspicion that he would have Snowden in the plane in a recent trip to Europe. And Brazil made statements about that. But as President Dilma Rousseff sometimes says, you know, Brazil does not have to have a position on every single issue that comes down the pike.
Raises another question, though, and that is, Juanita Darling, just how... I want to bring another caller on here, because he's talking about Brazil as compared to Venezuela, but you can say pretty easily that Venezuela has been anti-American for the most part, certainly under Chavez and under present leadership. How anti-American, how critical of the United States does Brazil remain, particularly under the present administration?
Well, Brazil has... Actually, I think has been very skillful at not making the U.S. too angry, but not undermining its credibility with other Latin American countries by being too complacent. I think one of the more brilliant things that Rousseff did early in her presidency was when Obama visited, she greeted him in a very friendly way. They worked out all of their trade matters, and then when he went to Chile, she announced her opposition to a U.S. position. So Brazil has certainly not made the United States as angry as Venezuela, but has retained enough independence to keep respect within the region and among other Latin American countries.
And Colin, you want to talk about Brazil and Venezuela? Go ahead.
Even with Lula and Rousseff's flaws, haven't they successfully pioneered a third way between the prevailing ideology in the United States, which is market fundamentalism, and the populist excesses of Hugo Chavez? Aren't we overstating the problems that Brazil currently has?
Paulo Cetera.
I don't think you're overstated. The problems are serious. They are recognized as serious in Brazil, but you're right in the sense that, Brazil, the Brazilian approach is not to be anti-America. Brazil is a very big continental country that defines a space that has to look for its own solutions. It has to work in democracy, in a sort of in a capitalistic system, but where the state has historically had an enormous presence, continues to have an enormous presence. Brazil is still, relative to others, a very closed economy. That is a matter of in debate now in Brazil. For the elites in Brazil, the economy is very open, because they can travel, and they travel like crazy, spending $8 billion a year. Not only the elites, this rising middle class, so they have access to cheaper goods, etc. But for those who stay in Brazil, the economy, prices is very high, and there is a whole discussion about the need to open the economy. I think the Venezuelan model is not seen as a model in Brazil. The more authoritarian approach doesn't work in Brazil. I think the system is truly democratically, but unfortunately dysfunctional. As some of the protests, and I love this when I saw after President Dilma Rousseff made some statements about, careful because this could hurt, the protest could hurt Brazil's image abroad. And immediately people started seeing, showing signs saying, we apologize for the inconvenience while we improve the country. I love that.
Juanita, darling, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that one of the things to look at the Brazilian economic model and how it differs is to look at the difference between how Mercosur functions as compared to the Washington consensus, and also to contrast it with ALBA, which really does not function at all.
I want to, in the time remaining here, go back to Brazil. Philip Pulella is Vatican correspondent with Reuters, and he's on a bus, actually the Pope's bus for journalists. Philip Pulella, glad to have you with us. Welcome to the program. I just would like to get your assessment, if I can, of what the response continues to be there to the Pope's visit.
Well, the response is exceptionally exuberant. I don't know if you probably saw the pictures of the arrival on Monday when the car was mobbed. We had a similar situation here in Aparecida, which is where I am now, where we're leaving now. He said a mass here this morning. Fewer people, obviously, but this is a smaller town. This is a religious stop. But it's been very exuberant, I would say.
And is your sense, I mean, having covered the Vatican, that there is maybe a game plan here to try to bring some of these evangelical converts back into the fold?
Well, I think that that might be part of it, but I really don't know if that's the starting priority. I mean, I think that basically he has come here, as we know, this trip was planned before he was even elected. Benedict was supposed to be here, and then he resigned, as we know. So I think that this being his inaugural trip outside of Italy anyway, I think he's trying to rally the faithful around the world using Latin America as the stage for it. In trying to push his feeling that the church itself has to be simpler, less of a bureaucracy, less rich. I was taken myself by the statement that he made a couple of days after his election when he received some of the journalists who were there to cover the transition. And he said how much I would like to see a church that is poor and for the poor. And he has spoken through his examples, not just words, by not living in the papal palace and downsizing the type of cars that he's using and things like that. So I think that it's actually very interesting that his first trip abroad is to a place like Brazil, which has a lot of problems. And to the developing world, which sends a clear signal of where he wants to take the church.
And that again is Philip Pulella, who joined us from Brazil. We appreciate his being with us. He's Vatican correspondent for Reuters. Also, I want to thank Juliana Barbosa, former AP reporter who was with us earlier, and Juanita Darling, associate professor of international relations, who spent the hour with us, San Francisco State professor, and Paulo Sotero, director of the Brazil Institute. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks and Chad McClymans. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.